Welcome, Wednesday, live. It's Inside Texas Football, sponsored in part, in total, by InsideTexas.com. All right. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about an article that Eric put out earlier this week. And I think it's a really fun, it's a fun premise. I mean, because I think a lot of times when we go into spring ball, obviously spring, new awakenings, we're all very excited about what the future can bring. And sometimes that can create some rose-colored glasses as we go into the experience. And one of the things that Eric did really well here is he kind of outlined what we're not going to learn during this experience. And I think it's a little bit of an Ian contrarian way of looking at it, but I like the approach here. So you listed out five different things. We're going to go through those individually, but let's start straight out of the gate with special teams. Special teams got us in some trouble last year. We started pretty strong. I think Bert Auburn had a really strong start to 2024. He had some very public troubles, let's say, in some high-profile situations as we moved throughout the year. And also, we were having some punt coverage. We put our defense in a lot of trouble in a lot of places last year. And fortunately, we had an incredible defense that kept us in a lot of games that other defenses might have folded in. And so, tell us why we're not going to know enough about special teams going into that game in Columbus.
Well, there's a couple reasons. Number one, kicking at Denny's Field where Texas practices is not the same as kicking in front of 100,000 fans in Columbus, Ohio.
Sure.
For any of you golfers that go out and kill it on the golf range and then you think you're going to take that beautiful swing and striking ability to the golf course, you kind of get an idea of what Bert Auburn's up against, only a lot more. Difficult situation. So you can't really replicate that the pressure, kicking for the SEC championship as he did versus Georgia. He just had some tough misses, and it's unfortunate because he's had some really great makes in his career. A number of kicks stand out. Alabama, Texas Tech, he's been good until this year. But we don't know how, if he's going to be great or bad or average or what. It's just impossible to replicate. Another thing you can't replicate is the situational awareness of being fatigued in the third quarter and being aware for a fake punt. Texas got caught for a couple of important fakes against Georgia and then against Arizona State. That situational awareness is very tough. You can coach it up. Now, I feel confident that they're going to be better at it. They're going to be a more experienced unit. We've talked a lot about how they missed some of the stalwarts from the year before, and then they also missed some of the stalwarts that were projected to be part of special teams. Michael Taft, Trey Wisner, they weren't on special teams nearly as much because they were too important at their respective positions. So I think it's going to be improved there, but we're not quite sure. They certainly have another number of athletes to make up for it, but it's going to take some time and coaching, and we're just not going to know for sure until the season unfolds. I feel good about Banks having his unit up to speed, but Banks can't go out there and kick it for Auburn. Not that we'd want him to anyway. He was a punter in college. We just won't know on Bert Auburn until the lights are on.
Coach, from a coaching perspective, I mean, what can you do? I mean, Eric outlines obviously the things that are tricky, right? Situational awareness, having the actual game in hand, or rather at stake while you're going up into this. But how, from a coaching perspective, what's the best they can hope to do during this spring practice?
Well, I'll say this. They have more eyes on special teams, right? He had a new analyst, Coach McKendu, helping with tight ends. So Banks can kind of focus more time on special teams. I know Sark, may not want to divvy up a lot of offensive time, or Coach PK divvy up a lot of defensive time, but they may have more special team meetings, like cover. I can say, speaking with UNLV, they had like three special teams meetings a day. It was so important. It was like, oh my gosh. But Coach Odom was a defensive guy. He was a big field position guy, right? So special teams was huge. Maybe they can spend a little more time with that, but then you got to get a lot of young guys up to speed on offense. So just dedicate more time to special teams, right? Have those night meetings and really hunker in and get a lot of you guys who are starters. You're going to play special teams. You don't have a choice. You're going to play special teams, right? And maybe you can do that, but you won't be able to know until fall camp and going to get into the football season versus spring.
I'm guessing it's not a coincidence that, Banks filled in for Sark on Monday's practice. And of course, they focus on special teams quite a bit. I wonder if that's a coincidence or not. But Banks deranged and he's going to start spending more time on it. But, man, he's so energetic and urgent when it comes to coaching special teams. I can only believe that he'll get everything within his control right. Mm-hmm. I guess you can include going and finding another kicker to compete with Auburn. Maybe that happens. We don't know. The portal hasn't opened yet. But he can't control what Auburn does. When the game's on the line, unfortunately.
One thing you did mention in your article, Eric, is some confidence in an improvement in the punting game. I mean, we do have a transfer at that position.
Yeah, Jack Baumeister from Utah, steady as they come. The only variable there we have to account for is, you know, he's going to have to punt a lot more at sea level rather than 4,500 feet.
Sure. So
maybe his hang time won't be just as good, but I feel a lot better about position field this year. That was the problem is, you know, they brought in a kid with a big leg, but ball placement was not great. I think the field position battle is going to be a lot more in Texas's favor, like we saw the year before. That's a bit of a projection. I like the young guys they have on coverage. We're hearing great things about Ryan Niblett. Warren Roberson is tailor-made for that position. Obviously, yes. Has the high-profile penalties. They've got the guys to do it. And typically when they have the guys to do it, they coach them up.
One thing, and this is just an observation from your article, and again, the premise of this article is things we won't learn in the spring. But outside of special teams, the uncertainty, as it were, or the areas where we may not learn things, they're all on the offensive side of the ball. And I'm just curious, why wasn't anything in the defense mentioned? Is it because of the experience there? Is it because of, or is it just the nature of spring ball?
You know, one of our really good commenters brought up D tackles, and I understand why people would have questions about that. I think we'll be able to find out about D tackles in practice because they're going up against seasoned offensive linemen. They've got tape coming over from Purdue, North Carolina. Not much on Hero Canoe from Ohio State, but we're hearing good things about him already. They're going to get to go up against Cole Hudson, Umeo Zulu, who's a grown man, DJ Campbell, who's a grown man. I feel like we're going to learn quite a bit about them. The things that we're not going to know necessarily are not all that important. We'll learn about them in August or maybe the first game is some of the schematic shifts that they're going to make. But we've already hinted at a couple of those, more dime, more ways of getting pass rushers on the field, that sort of thing. We won't know exactly in great detail until August or maybe September, but I'm not concerned about defense in case reading that article, you can walk away. A lot of times you can learn by what's not in the article. That was actually a good observation by LC there.
One of the, I want to get into the offensive side of the ball because these are areas, some of them I think may surprise some folks and others I think have been a concern for some time that hopefully we need to get some answers. But before we do, I want to hear from one of our sponsors.
I'm just going to say, guys, you probably need a fiduciary financial advisor. And I've got the guy for you. His name is David McClellan with Forum Financial. He works broadly and deeply with his clients as a financial life coach. And he should know something about coaching because he won several national championships as a swimmer for the University of Texas. He specializes in financial planning and has contributed numerous articles to Kipling on the topic of retirement tax bombs. So contact David today to be your fiduciary financial planner. And schedule a one-hour consultation to assess your financial situations. The free consultation is available, so just give him a call. The number is 312-933-8823. That's 312-933-8823. His email is also in the description below.
We have been very fortunate these last few years with a pretty cohesive offensive line. Not a lot of moving parts in there. We've had a lot of the same players outside of some injuries stay and really create a solid foundation for that. And moving forward, we are definitely going to have some new faces coming in on that offensive line. Again, one of those players that was filling in for some injuries for Kelvin Banks last year was Trevor Goosby. I think it's safe to say that we weren't surprised that he was talented, but I think we were pleasantly surprised at how well he performed against the competition he was put up against in those situations. And I think it's safe to say that we've got a pretty confident perspective on who's going to be playing left tackle. Right tackle is a little bit of a different story, Eric.
Yeah. I mean, Goosby, if we were hearing the same things about Brandon Baker and Andre Koja that we heard about Goosby, I wouldn't have included that in the section. That's the reason I mentioned Goosby. Baker, very talented kid coming in, very highly rated. Koja was kind of the opposite. He was only a 16 when he got on campus. He was a giant ball of clay. Very lowly rated, but, you know, the tape was intriguing for the way he moved at his size. Both are coming along. I don't know that I have a whole lot of confidence in them going up against SEC. We will get a bit of a barometer of them going up against a very good edge room in practice over the next few weeks. I'm not sure we're going to come away feeling very confident about right tackle. But more largely, you know, I think we're going to be concerned about the offensive run game identity. Now, they're going to be going up against a pretty good defensive line. We talked about that. Those are some full-grown men on the other side of the ball. Ethan Burks played a ton. The D tackles that they brought in played a lot. Alex January is coming along. Colin Simmons, of course, we know everything about him. So I'm not sure that we're going to get a true barometer on run game efficacy going into the season. I think they're going to be flying a little bit by the seat of our pants that first game against Ohio State to see if they can run the ball. Now, we are a little bit optimistic because they're going to institute run games – gap schemes more often. I think that's going to help out quite a bit. The threat of arch running is going to help out the run game quite a bit. The play action passing game is going to help out the run game quite a bit. They're going to have to keep safeties back, I think. But there's still going to be a lot of questions about not only right tackle, but overall the run game identity.
One thing I talked with Ian about in a video that's going to come out in a week or two is the idea of switching from a more of a zone blocking scheme to maybe playing a little bit more gap coach. And the way that Ian pointed that out is for maybe a less experienced offensive line or a line that maybe hasn't played together as much. Gap is a little bit better because the assignments are very clear for those, for those linemen. Is that something you see moving forward with this younger group of linemen?
I do. I mean, you see a lot of high schools running gap scheme. It's a lot easier to teach. You double team into the linebacker. It's easy. Stay on your double team to the linebacker. If you have to block down, somebody's pulling and pin and pull, you know, I'll block down. Where more zone, you don't see many teams executed as well. I mean, I know Eric can probably speak to this, being a 49ers fan. They run it very well. The Broncos ran it very well, but not many teams can execute it. It's really, really hard to stay on the same line, the same path in the zone running scheme. And so sometimes just why you see a guy like, I thought you had him, I thought I had him, you know, it's very hard, especially when you don't have much cohesiveness and play together a lot. But in gap scheme, it's really simple. It's really simple to teach, and you kind of let those guys be big guys, big humans, and let them actually work versus having to think so much. So I love the gap scheme.
The next position is tight end. Now, at the moment, going into this season, we had, I believe he was listed at 750 pounds. Jordan Washington was playing tight end. Yeah. Unfortunately, we have an injury that we're not totally clear on at the moment, but the news coming out is he is going to be hopefully totally good to go in the fall. But there's some reps that he's going to be missing in this spring. And I'm curious, you know, one of the things that's been laid out with this particular position is the depth. Now, the good news here, Eric, is ESPN thinks Spencer Shannon is having a breakout year. So we should be fine. I'm not entirely sure why you listed tight end in this article.
Yeah, I don't want to come across negative on Spencer Shannon, but that prediction came out of left field. Jordan Washington, it's a shoulder issue. I actually think he's going to be back for part of spring. I think he's going to only miss time because they're not going to rush him back this time of year. Obviously, he does need development, particularly as a blocker. There's just not a lot of depth there. There's very little. There's hardly any experience at all. Fortunately, like I wrote in the Monday practice notes, that Emory Winston, the true freshman, is looking pretty good. Actually, a pretty assertive blocker. He's got that thicker build, kind of a Juan Davis mindset. Not as tall as Juan, but wider than Juan. Showing good hands. So I don't know if we can expect a whole lot of him out of him this year, but I think there's probably a chance that he could be used in 12 personnel at times. That section was in there to remind fans that a tight end out of the portal is very likely on the way. There's going to be a lot of questions going in until they add a guy. If they add a guy like Baumeister at punter that just sets the floor a lot higher, somebody that's steady, credible blocker, credible receiver, that room's going to look a lot different.
Coach, with this, I mean, we had obviously a player in Washington, as Eric lined out, certainly I think it's safe to say is going to be highlighted more as a pass catcher than a blocker. We saw that in that first spring practice, the blocking that they were really kind of putting him through the paces on. What with a transfer, given what we have in the room right now, what kind of a tight end are you looking for that would really help with this particular setup?
I'll say two, somebody with a lot of game experience, right? Because you cannot substitute experience, but a guy who's a blocker. Like, you can use Washington as a receiver, but you need that second guy, right? If you want to run 12 personnel, who can, or you can find just a complete tight end who can catch the ball and block, right? Most older guys have been through,
yeah.
I mean, most guys have been through programs, they've seen it all. They've been probably used in different ways. It depends on what team you get him from, right? You understand what he learned in the previous offense and what he was able to do. So when these guys scout and portal tight ends, they're able to go watch film and say, okay, this guy can catch the ball, but he also is a blocker. So it depends on what Sark wants to do within the offense and what he thinks he needs, honestly. But you got Washington, who is a pass catching threat, who they're trying to bring along as a blocker. So go find that second guy who's a complete mauler you can throw in there and 12 personnel and just push people off the line.
Yeah, they don't need a dynamic receiving threat. They need a credible receiving threat that they can get the ball to, the constraint, the guy that the defense tends to forget about. Sometimes those guys are the most dangerous, especially in the red zone. Everybody else, sure, calling for everybody else. You're worried about Ryan Wingo. You're worried about, yeah, a running back out in the backfield. You're worried about Arch running it himself. You're worried about DeAndre Moore, and then all of a sudden this big goofy white guy is open in the corner of the end zone.
We've got two more positions or two more areas of concern that we're not necessarily going to know enough about coming out of spring ball. And I really want to get to those because I do, having read the article, Eric, I'm going to be really blunt with you. I've definitely got some pushback. But before we do, let's hear from our last sponsor tonight.
This video is brought to you by Lux Kitchen and Bath. Lux has been offering high-end kitchen and bathroom remodels for three generations throughout the greater Austin area. With five-star review after five-star review on Google and Facebook, and an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau, you can put your faith in Lux Kitchen and Bath's award-winning designers and skilled craftspeople to bring to life that dream vision of your special home. But that's not all. Lux's all-star team provides full remodels, large additions, and even commercial build-outs as well. So call Lux Kitchen and Bath at 833-358-LUX today. Or visit luxkitchenbath.com to discover where quality meets luxury and begin the process of transforming your home. Get a free quote today by calling 833-358-LUX. That's L-U-X-E. Or by visiting luxkitchenbath.com. Link in the description.
Uncertainty number four, Eric, has to do with progression passing. That is to say, the quarterback going through his progressions. Now, the thing that blows my mind out of this particular section is you understand very clearly that the quarterback's last name is Manning, and yet you still think that this is going to be an issue. I just want to know, like, were you asleep when you were writing this? He's clearly going to be amazing based on his surname alone.
This guy says I'm talking to you while I'm trying to fix a toilet. I would be on my phone calling a plumber to fix a toilet, my friend. Not having his top two wide receivers, the top two guys we expect to be receivers this coming year with Ryan Wingo out for spring and DeAndre Moore is not going to help these pursuits. They got a lot younger guys. I don't know that he's going to get the reps he needs with the right guys to get through the progression passing. I'm also a little bit concerned. I also added in that section that he has a lot on his plate. A first-year starter, yes, it's his third year in the program. Yes, he's a Manning. And yes, he is a legitimately smart quarterback. Mm-hmm. They have a ton on his plate with each play. You know, there might be a run call that's an RPO that could go in 10 different ways. I'm not even kidding. Depending on what the edge does, one of the linebackers does, what one of the safeties does. It can go in a lot of different ways. So he has a lot on his plate, and we're not going to know how much of that he's mastered until we see him playing against Ohio State in Columbus. Now, Sark better have a good idea. That's what he gets paid to do. But us fans and us writers, we're not going to be certain that he has a full grasp of what Sark is going to put on the table for him.
Coach, one of the things that I just an observation that I made of Arch, certainly very early when we saw him in early reps, was that he seemed like a guy to me that was definitely aware of his athleticism, but instead of immediately getting out of the pocket, that confidence allowed him to stay in the pocket. He trusted himself to get out of the trouble if he needed to. He's going to be going against live fire, in Columbus. It's going to be a different ballgame. I'm just curious, given all of the mental aspects of this that he's going to have to be processing, do you see him being a little bit more of a scrambler, certainly in the beginning of the season, maybe before he develops a little bit of this as he goes on?
That depends on the guys up front. They can protect him where he doesn't get rattled early. Then, yeah, I think he'd be able to go through his progressions. The game would kind of slow down for him, but it really depends on the pressure, right? I mean, every quarterback's great until they start getting hit and have a ton of pressure in their face. But the fact that he can get out and scramble, is what makes him dangerous. But I think this offense is going to be basketball on grass, man. And I think he has complete control of it. Another guy from Louisiana, old Pistol Pete Maverick. I mean, I think the game's going to come to him natural, just like him. You saw him the late option against Mississippi State, about to get tackled and then pitched out. Yeah. Like, you can tell the game just comes to him natural. It's like he does it without thinking. Just so smooth with it. So I think he'll be fine versus Ohio State. He reminds me of a guy, when it comes to the toughest game, he just rises to the occasion and makes the right plays. Right? He has the hit factor. You really can't explain it.
He has a great field vision. We got to push back on this one a little bit. David Williams says, Texas went through passing regression so much last year that of the top four receivers last year, two were running backs, one was a tight end, and one was a wide receiver. Every level of the pass receivers were significant. Yeah, I got to push back on that one quite a bit. If you go back to some of the tapes, there's highlights of a lot of open receivers being missed. A lot of those running backs were simple checkdowns with other guys. He was feeling pressure that wasn't quite there. He wasn't getting through his progressions often enough, if you ask me. In the tight end, a lot of those were great play design, play calls at the right time against the right coverage. I think Sark is to credit for Gunnar Helm's season as much as Quinn Ewers and even as much as Gunnar Helm. There was a lot of good play calls. Gunnar Helm wasn't really routing up guys one-on-one. He was just finding open spots created by the rest of the play design. So I don't think we've seen anything close to the progression passing we're going to eventually see. The question with Arch Manning is, are we going to see it in the first few games of the season?
One of the things you highlighted here, Eric, and this is a challenge specifically when it comes to trust you have with your wide receivers. We're very confident that a wide receiver will likely be coming from the transfer portal. We've got Ryan Wingo, who's not practicing, and DeAndre, who's not practicing. Those are some key components there that you want to be starting to build some reps with over the spring. How much of a concern is that for you?
Was that for Charlie or for me? Sorry
about that. Oh, sorry, that was for you, Eric. I apologize.
Yeah, I mean, the timing is semi-important. Now, he created a lot of timing with DeAndre Moore before either of them ever played significant snaps. You know, we talked about they're both in the 2023 class. They're both on basically third string. And, you know, we would hear in workouts that, man, these guys seem to have some telepathy. And then, you know, they got that Mississippi State game. I think DeAndre had 7 catches, 100 yards, 2 touchdowns, something like that. I think they're going to be perfectly fine. Now, the thing about Wingo is he's still learning to read coverages. There were a lot of times where I don't think Ewers was to blame for some of the miscues between the two. I think that's probably a loss for Wingo. A lot of that he can learn, not necessarily by doing. He can learn by watching in practice and just getting more experience. But they still have a whole summer to prepare. Mm-hmm. They all work very hard. They're still going to have August camp. I'm not too worried about it, you know, especially with Moore. Now, the transfer – you know, luckily the value of bringing in some of these transfers is they're more experienced. You know, they're not bringing in a first-year guy. You know, the guy that they would bring in, I think, has already played 3 years. Matthew Golden had experience. Adnan Mitchell had experience, especially big game experience. So I'm not too concerned about that with the new guy. But there is still a bit of a learning process. That guy's going to have to learn the playbook as well, in addition to, you know, making sure that they're on the same page with the quarterback.
One, and let's go into this last point you had here. And I think this is really, to me, the key of this, because one of the most infuriating parts of the Sark offense over the last few years has been that red zone area. I mean, he's been brilliant between the 20s, and then we get into the red zone, and I think everybody starts, you know, biting their nails. What are some concerns, and then maybe what are some signs of hope? And I'm going to throw this one to you, Coach, going into this season that we might be able to solve that riddle that has been the red zone for Sark's offense.
Yeah, one of the main things has already been mentioned. You got to play honest because Arch can pull. In an RPO situation, he can keep it. So defense has to stay honest. The safety has to stay honest. He just can't fly to the ball. If you look at even the sweep, the tall sweep against Ohio State, he made pull one of his old uncle moves and bootleg and go the other way and go score. Like, you have to play honest. You can't just crash down and play with your hair on fire in a goal line in the red zone situation versus Texas going forward. So he'll read coverages. I know things happen a lot quicker, you know, in that area, but he can pull the ball down and run. That's what made Vince so dangerous. I'm not calling him Vince, but I'm saying that's what made those type of quarterbacks so different, is they can pull the ball down and run and then still find an open guy while they're scrambling, right? So that makes it dangerous, and I think that'll open up so much in the red zone because guys have to play Texas honest going forward.
Eric, you highlighted Manning in your article as being a plus one runner, but you also mentioned three running backs, Gibson, Clark, and Baxter, as potential maybe fixes for this area. It's putting a lot of pressure on them, but it's certainly going to change the dynamic.
Well, I think it does help, especially with Arch being a plus one. They think Arch being a plus one is going to make life easier for all the other running backs. That's not something they had last year. They had way too much, maybe way too many guys on the backside were making plays, especially versus Georgia. They're so fast, so athletic when you get up to those top teams. Now that they're not going to be able to do that with Arch. Arch will just run around the corner right behind you. So that's a big part. But the three running backs that they'll probably highlight in the red zone weren't really available last year. Now, Jarek, they didn't really trust him enough to give him a big carve-out for that role. That went to Trey Weiser for the most part. But Jarek's going to be ready for that. Christian Clark is back. We had a very favorable report on him the other day. Now the issue with Christian is he's not necessarily the most downhill guy. He's a bit of a jump cut and go guy. He keeps being compared to Bijan Robinson. Not saying he's Bijan Robinson, but some similar run style where he's going to try to juke. Sometimes you want a guy that's no nonsense. C.J. Baxter should be back in time for Ohio State. I don't know. We're not going to know how good he is until probably the season starts. So that's another a variable. But I think the running backs coming back, one of those guys is going to step up and be the red zone guy. Probably Jarek Gibson, in my estimation.
So those are the five areas that we probably are not going to get the answers that we need going into the season. And to review that, special teams and kicker, right tackle, perhaps even the efficacy of the run game, which we talked a little bit about moving to a different type of blocking scheme. Tight ends, it's a high probability we'll be coming into the transfer portal for another tight end. The progression in the passing game, how is Arch able to read this offense? And I think the thing that Eric has pointed out, I know Ian has as well, is that Arch is going to be asked to do a lot for a first-year full-time starter. And it's not to say that he can't handle it, but it is a heavy load. And finally, that red zone offense, which has been a question, unfortunately, for several years. And speaking of questions, we do have a few of yours that I just want to get to. And we'll start with the AJJ here. And I'm just curious. I'll throw this one to you here, Eric, to start. But how much playing time can you guys see Nate Kibble getting?
Yeah, I need to get a lot more information on the offensive line and defensive line. You know, I think today they went full pads, and they were supposed to go full pads on Monday with Sark there. They did not. I'm going to get a call here in about an hour or so, 2 hours, and I'm going to go over offensive line, assuming that they were in full pads, to get a full authentic rundown. You can't really gauge it when they're just doing thud. They do like Kibble quite a bit. I just don't know that he'll play unless there's an injury. Neto Umeozulu is lining up for left guard. DJ Campbell, of course, is our right guard. I would not rule out a transfer. I would not rule it out on the offensive line. They have been loath to do that in the past, but I think their process is changing a little bit. So I don't know what to expect on Kibble yet. I do know that they like him a lot, and I think he's got sort of a Kelvin Banks head and a DJ Campbell body, and that makes for a good combination. Not quite the athlete that DJ is, but there's a lot of upside there.
Speaking of Campbell and Neto, I want to take this one to you here, Coach. These are two, at least young players, that have a reputation of being a bit of maulers. And we're talking about that gap run scheme. Yeah. I mean, this really plays into their favor.
Yeah, I'm going to say so. I mean, they don't have to think as much, right? You're just going forward and just whooping the guy in front of you, so to speak. If it's a down block, I feel sorry for the nose tackles or the three ticks. They're going to be able to crash down and get out to those guys. And if it's a double team with either one of those guys, the line of scrimmage is going to be moved. The linebacker is going to have to either run around to get through to make a tackle or something, but they're going to be able to move the line of scrimmage going forward in a gap scheme. But that fits these two perfectly, who they are, and you just want to see it more consistent on a consistent basis from both of them.
I think DJ, I predicted it to happen last year, and it didn't. I thought Campbell would make a big jump in his third year. I'm going to do it again. I'm going to make a prediction for him to have a big jump this year. Guard tackle counter with him coming around. It's going to be quite a sight to see. He's looking leaner than ever. He's taking on a leadership role. Which is not something we even came close to writing in the past. Not that he was ever a negative at all, but it wasn't, just wasn't that vocal guy that he's starting to become in the absence of Kelvin Banks and some of the other guys, Jake Majors, of course. So I'm predicting a big year out of DJ Camp, which will make Williams David, he'll always be Williams David to me, his IT handle, very happy. Devon Campbell, he still doesn't call him DJ Campbell, was his favorite recruit in that cycle, if I'm not mistaken. 2023 was Malik Muhammad. So I think he's going to have a big year. Guard tackle counter, that's going to be a big-time play. If you're not familiar with it, that's how OU has given Texas trouble fits in the past. I think it's going to become a very big play for Texas in this upcoming season.
If that particular run scheme is something that you're unfamiliar with, we invite you to stay here at Inside Texas Football on our YouTube channel. Ian and I are starting to do some teaching tapes. We're breaking down these blocking schemes so you have a better understanding of the vocabulary going to it, especially that gap scheme, which is probably going to play relatively heavily into Sark's offense this year. We want to thank everybody for being here tonight. If you haven't joined us yet at InsideTexas.com, now is the time to do it. We have a special going right now that I think it's pretty hard to beat. It's $1 for 4 months. I mean, I don't know how you're going to get a better deal from that. This entire premise tonight was predicated on an article that Eric put out earlier this week. There's a lot of really good discussion going on the board, and we would love for you to join us over there. So thank you, gentlemen, so much for being here tonight. We look forward to seeing everybody here continue. And go ahead and join us at InsideTexas.com. Thanks so much, everybody.